Hi everyone, welcome to Employment Matters, a podcast brought to you by the Employment Law Alliance, the largest network of labor and employment lawyers from the best law firms around the world. I'm your host, Elsie Chan, partner at Dickinson Hong Kong. On the program, we span the globe and receive updates on critical issues from ELA members in each region. On today's episode, we are going to discuss the key employment law developments in mainland China, Hong Kong, and Taiwan, respectively, in 2024. Joining me today on the program is Bai Hongzhuan, partner at Junhe Beijing in the PRC, and Eva Chuang, senior associate at Li Chai & Partners in Taipei. Welcome, Hongzhuan and Eva. We are delighted to have you on our program.
Well, hello everyone. Hello, Elsie. Hello, Hongzhuan. I'm Eva from Li Chai Partner Taipei. Thank you for inviting me to this podcast. I'm glad to join the podcast with you and Hongzhuan.
Hi, Elsie. Hi, Eva. Good morning. It is very exciting to do this program with both of you.
Thanks. Let's start with Eva. I understand that there are some legal developments in Taiwan in the area of gender equality and sexual harassment. Could you please tell us more about these?
Well, yes. In response to the lingering effects of the last year's Me Too movement, Taiwan government amended the Gender Equality in Employment Act last year, which officially came into effect on March 8 this year. Well, the law specifically adds relevant regulations for preventing workplace sexual harassment, for example, sexual harassment by college business associates, supervisor or employer during non-working hours will also now fall under the scope of the new regulations. And where in case of abusive authority harassment, the punitive damage may be awarded at double to triple amount of damage as determined at a request by the victim. Moreover, the new law imposed various obligations on employer to prevent sexual harassment at the workplace. For example, employer with 10 or more but fewer than 30 employees should establish a complaint channel and publicly display it in the workplace. And for employer with 30 or more employees, in addition to setting up such channels, the employer should also formulate internal rules for preventing and handling sexual harassment in accordance with the new law. And when receiving a complaint from a victim, the employer should take certain measures, such as providing or referring necessary medical service for them, or referring psychological consultation to the complainant. If a sexual harassment incident is confirmed, an appropriate disciplinary or corrective action should be taken by the employer. So starting from this year, it is recommended for all the companies in Taiwan comprehensively review the internal measures for preventing the sexual harassment at the workplace.
Thank you, Eva. Actually, the situation in Hong Kong is similar. If the employees committed wrongful acts, say sexual harassment, employers shall be vicariously liable, save and except that if they have a proper policy in place and provide proper training to the employees. So for the employers to protect their position, it is very important for them, no matter whether they are in the area of Taiwan, Hong Kong, or even mainland China, to have proper policies in place with respect to sexual harassment and discriminations. Hongzhuan, talking about the mainland China, like other jurisdictions around the world, I understand from the news and financial reports that there have been layoff issues in your jurisdiction since last year. What should employers bear in mind when laying off employees?
Thanks, Elsie. I think when doing the layoffs in China mainland, we usually advise companies prioritize several things. The first is to address two whys. So one is why to do the layoff, where you need to identify your business case, your business reasons to do the project. The other one is to answer why me, where you need to identify why the specific employee will be affected. Answering both questions is not only helpful to identify the legal ground for termination, but also fundamental for the communication with the employees. The second thing is to address the legal approach of termination of employment. Most commonly used approach is mutual separation, where companies would provide additional severance above statutory standard to encourage employees to sign mutual separation agreement. A reasonable transition period of 1 month or even more is usually critical too.
Thanks, Hong Xuan. In fact, Hong Kong is also facing an economic downturn. As you will agree, Hong Kong is one of the world's top financial centers. And in order to attract more investors, the Hong Kong Monetary Authority has launched the MRC scheme, the full name being the Mandatory Reference Checking Scheme, as an effort to promote and protect the integrity of the banking sector by stopping the rolling bad apples phenomenon. The MRC scheme aims to prevent employees with a record of misconduct during their employment in one institution from obtaining subsequent employment in another institution without disclosing their misconduct to their new employers. This will increase the credibility and the public confidence in the banking sector. Under the MRC scheme, the recruiting institutions are required to approach the former and current employers of the relevant conduct-related information covering the last 7 year period. The reference providing institutions should provide the relevant information within 1 month of the request. For HR, there are a couple of things they will need to consider. For example, whether the company will need to review its employment offer such that the employment should be subject to a satisfactory MRC check. In addition, a system should be put in place to keep proper employees' record such that if the company receives MRC requests later, it has the necessary information to provide. HR may consider putting in place templates for communicating with other institutions for the MRC check. Hong Zhen and I have been talking about the economic situations in our jurisdictions. Alpha, is there any major change to the economy in Taiwan?
Well, yes, based on my observation in recent years, the gig economy has been thriving, leading many foreigner employers to have a demand for hiring Taiwanese workers as independent contractors. When foreign employers hire Taiwan nationals as independent contractors, well, they must consider the following legal risk. The first thing is to know that when employing Taiwanese workers as an independent contractor, many foreign employers often mistakenly believe that if both parties agree to foreign law as the governing law, the Taiwan Labor Standards Act doesn't apply. However, such an idea may not be correct. According to our precedent cases, there is a case hold that as long as the worker is a Taiwan national, Taiwan Labor Standards Act may be applied, even though both parties have expressly agreed in their agreement that foreign law should be govern it. And the second thing to know that is that even if the contract between both parties mention the worker working as an independent contractor, Taiwanese court will still assess the factual circumstance to determine that whether there exists an actual subordinate relationship, such as the court may taking the following factors like whether the working hours and workplace should be determined by the worker themselves, and like whether the worker can refuse any assignment from the company, whether the worker can provide services to another third-party entity during the service for their employer. And if the court finds that the worker has subordinated relationship to the employer, the company cannot unilaterally terminate this worker. They can only terminate him or her for specific reason under the Taiwan Labor Standards Act. So the issue I just mentioned often looked by many foreign companies in recent years. So I hope to remind everyone to pay attention to them and that even if foreign law is agreed upon as governing law, Taiwanese court or regulatory authority may still have their jurisdiction over the subject cases.
Thanks a lot, Alpha. The situation in Hong Kong are similar. Turning to Hong Zhen, the company law in mainland China will be amended in July this year. Will there be any impact on the labor law?
Yes, the new company law has added and highlighted the legislative purpose of protecting the employees' rights and interests. There are several new requirements under the new company law. First is, if a limited liability company establishes a board of supervisors, then there should be at least 3 supervisors, and the proportion of employee supervisors shall not be less than 1/3. Second, a limited liability company with more than 300 employees must have at least 1 employee director, unless it has an employee supervisor. Third, employee directors and employee supervisors must be elected by the Employee Representatives Congress or All Employees Congress or in other what we call democratic forms.
Thank you, Hongzhuan. That's very interesting. So can the senior management members concurrently act as the employee director or supervisor?
This is indeed one of the frequently asked questions. The company law itself has made it clear that senior management members cannot act as employee supervisors, but it does not provide the same rule for employee director. However, this has been prohibited by some local regulations. So we will need to wait for the implementation rules of the company law to see more details in this regard.
So how should the employee directors and supervisors be elected then?
Although the law stipulates that the Employee Representative Congress would be the basic form of democratic management of a company, it is not a must for the employee directors and supervisors to be elected through All Employees Congress or Employees Representatives Congress. Literally, online election by all employees or offline election by the temporary representatives informally elected by the employees should be fine. However, it is also important to note that employee directors or supervisors must be registered with the Administration of Market Regulation, which may require submission of certain proof materials of the election. Therefore, to decide the form of election, we need to decide in conjunction with the practical requirements for registration. At present, the company law has not yet clarified the above rules. For details, we will wait for the implementation rules of the company law that will be issued at a later stage this year.
Thank you, Hongzhuan. So let's keep an eye on the latest development. I also understand that there are new rules about the export of personal information in the mainland China. Could you please briefly tell us what they are?
Yes. In March, the Cyberspace Administration of China has issued the provisions on promoting and regulating cross-border data flows. According to the new rules, employees' personal information export may be exempted from the data export formalities of government security assessment, standard contract filing, or certification. In the following 2 scenarios, one scenario is that the export of employees' personal information, including sensitive personal information, is indeed necessary for cross-border human resource management, in accordance with the company's legally formulated employment policies. Another scenario is that the export of employees' personal information, excluding sensitive personal information, is not more than 100,000 individuals accumulatively as of January 1st of the current year. However, you can say the regulations do not specify the criteria of indeed necessary for cross-border human resource management. So the companies should do a further review of their employees' personal information to be exported, such as through the workday. So if the export of employees' sensitive personal information or falling the scope of indeed necessary for cross-border human resource management, then the export could be exempted from the data export formalities. As per our previous experience, employees' personal information relating to the identity of political party member, religion, or household registration information may be viewed not necessary to be exported for cross-border HR management and identify and establish the necessity internally. Another thing to be reminded is that based on the current interpretation by the Cyberspace Administration of China and current market understanding, export of non-employees' personal information cannot fall in the scope of indeed necessary for cross-border HR management. So the export of personal information of job applicants, employees, family members, and emergency contacts and other related non-employees cannot be exempted from the data export formalities.
There are really quite a lot of new legal changes in mainland China this year. In fact, the Hong Kong legislators are also considering making fundamental changes to the definition of continuous employment under the Employment Ordinance. An employee is entitled to receive various statutory benefits or protections if they are under continuous employment. Therefore, a change in this definition is quite a major change in Hong Kong employment law. Currently, an employer will be deemed to be under continuous employment if it provides not less than 18 hours of service for a continuous period of 4 weeks or more. It is suggested that after the amendments, employees who have been providing not less than 68 hours of service in a month will be considered as under continuous employment. The purpose of the amendments is to include more employees under the protection nest of the Employment Ordinance. The proposed amendment is still under discussion, and we will keep our audience informed if the amendments have been finalized. Well, this is all the time that we have today. Alpha and Hongzhen, it has been a very interesting discussion. Thank you for your time, and it was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you. I've also learned a lot from both of your sharing today. And I think the change in law, economic and government policy and labor relations are closely intertwined with each other. And it's worth for us to observation in the future. And I believe that our listener, like me, has gained a lot today. Thank you, both of you.
Thanks, Elsie and Eva. I totally agree. I'm so glad to share and discuss. And I look forward to future sharing and discussions. Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. If you would like to connect with Elva, Hongzhen, or myself, please click on our respective bios in the description of this podcast. We also encourage you to reach out to any of our lawyers around the world by selecting Find a Lawyer on the ELA website at ela.law. In addition, search the ELA website where you can sign up to receive invitations to our upcoming webinars, download white papers, and on-demand content from our online library, or access the ELA's exclusive Global Employers Handbook. You have been listening to The Employment Matters, a podcast brought to you by the Employment Law Alliance, the world's largest network of labor and employment lawyers from the best law firms around the globe. I'm Elsie Chan. Thanks for listening.